Today I want to talk about the peripheral figures who we don't often meet, and that we meet them, we see them, we come across them, but we don't even know what to do with them. We're going to talk today about Eliezer Eved Avraham. We're going to read some of the Midrashim about them. I'm going to read them, just some wacky Midrashim about Eliezer that appear. And also we're going to talk about Devara Meineket Rivka, who there's an incredible, it's fleeting, very fleeting, and then I'm going to share with you a very beautiful piece by Rav Neria, Zichrono Livracha. And he gives a very interesting perspective on these peripheral figures, because we spend so much time, we spend so much energy on the avot, but every great person has people who are peripheral to them, who surround them, who help them become the people that they are. And you know, very often we spend so much time focusing on the person himself without the support cast, and so it's worth taking some time, especially in Chayei Sarah, where the support cast actually plays a major, major, major role. It's the second one, Bereshit 2, I think. They play a major, major role in Avraham, and then Dvorah, as we'll see, it's very interesting. We'll see that her role is difficult to understand, difficult to know, but she's there nonetheless. Okay, so we'll start in Perachav Dalid. Pasuk Aleph. Chapter 24, Pasuk Aleph, Pasuk 1, 24:1. Okay. It says the Torah, Avraham zaken ba bayamim, v'Hashem beirach et Avraham bakol. Avraham is old, he had grown old, come getting on in days. God had blessed Avraham with everything. Bakol, there's a huge law, there's a lot of Torah on what it means, bakol. Children, the Ramban has a long thing about the word kol, is a key word. Did you read through it? You read the Ramban on it? The key word. There's a long, long Ramban on that pasuk. What does kol mean? But we're obviously not going to do that. But Yomer Avraham el Avdo Zikan Beito Hamoshel B'chol Asher Lo Simna Yodcha Tachet Yerechi. So that it's a fascinating description of this person. Avraham said to his Eved, Zikan Beito. Zikan Beito?
The elder of his house.
The elder of his house. Hamoshel B'chol Asher Lo. Who manages everything of his. Where do we see a similar phrase? This is for you, Shira. Where do we see a similar phrase in Bereshit? Moshel b'chol asher lo.
Right.
We see Yosef, when Yosef rises up in the house of right, that's okay. When Yosef rises up, and she's into the language thing. When Yosef rises up in the house of Potiphar, he's in charge of the whole house, and it says
entrusted with everything.
Correct. So this is a person who we've kind of met. We haven't really met. You know, but he seems to be pretty important.
I need a good one of those.
You need Moshel b'chol asher lo.
Personal assistant.
Right. I mean, it seems like that there was this, that Avraham like made the decisions, but behind every great man is this person behind the scenes who is in charge of everything. The chief of staff. That's right. A good chief of staff is really invaluable. Put it that way. And then he says, but just the language of Zikan Beito, the elder of his house. Okay? And Moshel b'chol ha-shalom. They're very, very fascinating, very descriptive. And he says to him, Simna yadcha tachat yerechi. Place your hand under my hip. By the way, what's missing here, by the way? Would you describe him? Fascinating, what's missing?
Eliezer.
Yeah, who is he? What's his name?
Eliezer.
What? Eliezer. They don't get that. They don't. We've discussed this before.
Eliezer. It's from a children's CD. Well, it used to be a children's record.
We were the only ones that grew up on 613 Torah. So, they don't know it.
Yeah, we don't know
what this is. I mean, Uncle Moshe.
No, 613 Torah
Avenue is when I grew up.
I know, Uncle Moshe. Light years that, I mean, nothing gets, don't record me about
this thing.
Uncle Moshe is before, no, it was before that. It was Shmuel Kunda, who was an excellent, talented storyteller, and he tells stories in voices. So he has this whole, he plays all the characters here.
It was really very, they don't do things like
and
that
it's
anymore.
By Parsha.
I have all the CDs, I can send it to you. You can borrow it if you want.
Yeah.
It's all.
They're wonderful.
Yeah, it was very good.
Our kids don't understand it. You listen to it? You grew up with it? So
it was records.
Don't understand it.
It was records,
Yaakov,
especially in Bereshit.
Instead of Yaakov and you know.
Anyway, so his name is Eliezer. Why does his name not appear here? In fact, it doesn't appear the entire parsha. How do I know what his name is?
Rashi.
Rashi says Eliezer. Now, how do we know what his name is?
Next
Earlier parsha, right? Where do we see it? Good.
Very good.
That's this week's parsha. That's this week's parsha. Where do we see his name?
Do you see it when he with the war? Is his name in the war between the four kings and the five kings?
We see his name. We see his name. In Perek Tedvav, Pasuk Bet, Hashem says to Abraham is like depressed after the war with the four kings and the five kings. And Abraham says, God says, I'll take care of you, I'll protect you. And Abraham says, Anochi Hashem Elohim, Mati Tenli, what can you give me? Anochi Halilich Ariri, I don't have any children. Uben Meshek Beiti, Huda Mesek Eliezer. Even translate that pasuk. The Ben Meshek Beiti, the person who's the Meshek Beiti, part in charge of my household, yeah, is like Damesek Eliezer. What's Damesek Eliezer? Eliezer, Rashi says, from Damascus. You know, that's very fascinating. Like there's got to be some crazy exotic story of Eliezer. Like, where did he come from? Like, how did Avram pick up Avram from Aram Harayim, and he stopped in Haran, and he met Eliezer on the way, and Eliezer said, I want to be your servant. Somebody could write a book about that, you know, one of these historical fiction books about the meeting of Avram and Eliezer. You know, we know that Eliezer is a righteous person.
Does he convert?
What does that mean?
He's part of Avram's household.
Ah, correct. Clearly.
He becomes a believer.
Absolutely. I think Avram would never have accepted Eliezer. In fact, we have clear proof that Eliezer is a believer. How do we have clear proof from this week's parasha? As we know, later on, Eliezer, when he gets the job, Avram gives him this task, and Eliezer gets to Haran, and what does he immediately do before he reveals himself and says, I'm looking for a girl? He davens.
Or makes a deal.
Well, but he makes a deal with God. He doesn't make a deal with anybody else.
The right one.
Correct.
But isn't
correct.
There a thing about, like, we should all get to the level of the servant
of
God or something like that?
One second. I'll quote you the Midrash from Nerim Neria because you posted it here. The Midrash says, right, the Midrash says the following. What's fascinating is about this parasha is the vast majority of it is a story of Eliezer. Like, the whole parsha is very strange, because the whole story is a story of Eliezer. It's a story of Eliezer going to search for a wife for Yitzchak, and then what he does, his encounter with Rivka, and then he tells the story again. There's a long description of him repeating the whole story to, like, you know, when he finally gets into the house of Rivka, and her brother, and the father, and the mother, he goes back and he tells them the story again. It's very, very strange. So the Midrash says the following: Yafes sichatan shel avdei batei avot mitoratan shel banim. The talk of the servants of the avot is more important than the talk of the children. Parshato shel Eliezer, the Midrash says, the parsha of Eliezer shnayim u'shlosha dapimhu omra vishona visharatz. The whole thing is migufei Torah. Why is this in the Torah? The words of Eliezer, the Ain Damomi Tamerik Misarel and Mibuya Mikra. Okay, the Sheretz Migufiya Torah. The idea of Sheretz in Ain Damomi Tamerik is from Mibuya Mikra. The halachot that are like, you have two words, and then the Chachamim come and say, make those two words into huge halachot.
From what Eliezer says?
But here in the Torah, you have like 50 psukim of what Eliezer says. That seems
incongruous.
Superfluous. We already know the story. Why do we have to have him tell the story again? And yet we find that it's important. It's very interesting. Hamoshel b'chol asher lo. What is the description of Hamoshel b'chol asher lo? Who is lo in this case? Wait, look at pasuk bet. Abdo again. Zikan beito. The zikan, the elder of beito.
Rough paragraph. Are you back?
Parak chavdalik. Back in chavdalik. Zikan, the elder of Avram's house. Hamoshel b'chol asher lo. Lo means Avram, okay? Or
it could mean him, that he's in control of himself.
Very good. Can I need the Kliyakar? Okay, so the Kliyakar has a long thing, a very beautiful idea. It's a great Musar Haskel that he says, Eliezer, Moshe b'chol asher lo, is not b'chol asher le'Avram, rather is Moshe b'chol asher lo to himself. If you have the Kliyakar, almost no, a couple of you haven't, look on Kliyakar and Pasuk Bet. You see it? Kliyakar Pasuk Bet?
Snapshot.
What?
Snapshot,
but it's a good idea. Ki ra'a oto ne'eman b'chol beitohu. Okay, he saw him, ne'eman b'chol beito, reliable in his house. Al ken ha'emino shelo yukach shochad. So therefore he believed that he would not take a bribe. V'yisa libo isha she'ena hagunalo. What was the fear? The fear was, so now Eliezer was given a task, but a very important task, but there's a lot of money to be gained from this. How much is the daughter, how much is the son of Abraham worth? How much would a person pay in order to marry his daughter to the son of Abraham? Tremendous amount of money. And how does Abraham know? What? A lot of property. Just, it's tremendously valuable. So how does Abraham know that this person isn't going to turn around and go to the highest bidder? So he says, V'nuchal lomar, I skipped a line, we can say, Shabilat lo, the word lo, Shav el Eliezer, he also knows the snapshot, so we can say, because it returns, it describes Eliezer. V'fishakol mishehu lahut achar midat hamamon, hare memono sholet shalit alav. Right? A person who wants money, a person who's driven by money.
No, who's lohit achar mamon.
No, what's lohit? Burns for money.
And
if the thing that you want is money, then you don't control money. Rather, money controls you. Et kol ha-sheyachpot yitnu, his ability to gather everything he wants. Aval hu eno shalit al mamono klal. But he has no control over his money. As it says, okay, ish asher yitem, this is in Shirat Shirim. Ish asher yitno lo Elohim osher v'chavod v'nesach nechasim, this is not Shirat Shirim, it's Kohelet, v'lo yash litenu Elohim le'echol mimenu. He says, all people who have all, everything they want in life, all the money they want, but God doesn't allow them to control it. I remember this, my rabbi, I had Rabbi Hyatt in Silver Spring, used to tell the story of John D. Rockefeller. So Rockefeller used to have all these construction projects in New York going on all the time. He would go and visit the projects. So one day he went out to a construction project, and it was lunchtime. So he sat down next to one of the workers, and they got Mr. Rockefeller. You know, he's a very, you know, rich, wealthy man. So Rockefeller turned to him and said, "Now I envy you." He said, "What do you mean you envy me?" He said, "You open your lunch, you sit down to lunch, you got this lunch your wife made for you, you take out your lunch, and you can enjoy a good lunch." He said, "I have so much money, I have developed ulcers. And I worry so much about all the different investments that I made that all I can drink is warm milk. So I have all the money in the world, but I can't eat. And you work hard. You have a hard life. But you could sit down and enjoy a good lunch." And that's what makes me think of. Anyway, and there's a lot of truth to that. The more you have,
everything you own owns a piece of you.
Owns a piece of you. And it's definitely true. But Havalei Lumeimar, it should have said da 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 da. One second. Okay.
Yeah.
I definitely feel that way also. I mean, although you just got more stuff when you came here. It doesn't really help. Lemala min ha-pasuk, above the pasuk says, Gam kol ha-adam asher natan Elohim osher v'nechasim v'ishlitu le'echol mimenu zu matat Elohim hu. He says, it's interesting, it's a gift from God, someone who gets what he wants from Hashem and he can eat. It's a gift from God. Hizkir natan la'shonovar zeh ha-mistapek v'sameach b'chalko. If you have enough, you have what you have, and you're happy with it. Hu ha'ish ha'shalit u'moshel b'chol asher lo. That's a person whose property doesn't control him, but he controls his property. V'zel lo yikach v'vadai ma she'eino ra'ui lo. And this kind of person won't take that which is not appropriate for him. So he says there are two types of people. There's a person whose house controls him, and then there's a person who's moshel b'chol asher lo, who controls what he has. And he says, that's a gift of God, to be a person in control of what you have. It's a beautiful, beautiful, powerful idea. That we want things. We all want things. We want a nice house. We want stuff. We want a better car. You know what I'm saying? With the video in the back. The video camera looking backwards.
Right.
You know, anyway.
Backup camera.
What? Right, but he's saying that, of course he's going to agree with that, but the idea is that if you don't, if you're not samech bechalko, then your stuff begins to control you. It defines you. You begin to act out of the want for stuff as opposed to enjoying the stuff that you have. And it's empirically true, you know. It's always the next thing. It's always the next car, or the next house, or the next, you know, whatever.
The next cell phone.
What?
The next cell phone
or whatever it is.
Interesting, which I don't know
idea, is I recall like a whole conversation about Abraham was worried that Eliezer wouldn't necessarily find the best wife because he wanted his daughter to marry, right?
Correct, yes.
So then, that's not a yearning for material stuff. That's a yearning for a spiritual advancement. You know, more, whatever it is, like a better shit up in terms of religious goals. And so...
Well, first of all, you don't have to jive all the midrashim. I really mean that. But don't even try. Actually, absolutely don't.
Right.
The reason why you don't want to even try is because there are different Mamre Chazal, there are different Chachamim. So if you try, you're not going to succeed.
But there's also something, there is something that works, and I haven't yet worked it out in my mind, but there is something about wanting to strive, but also being okay. Like, there's only one Gadol Hador, not everyone can marry him. Like, there's only one, you know, and sort of, I don't know, seeking out...
See, I always found the thing about Eliezer wanting Abraham, Yitzchak to marry his daughter.
I found that financial?
It's no, strange. Just very strange.
Think it's the most natural thing in the world.
Absolutely.
But it's
no
so
way.
Not. Eliezer is
an Eved. That's right. It wasn't even the idea that it
don't
would even be thought of.
Don't you watch Downton Abbey? It's like, no, I've heard of. It took a very long time for anyone else to get into it.
What do you mean, Downton Abbey?
Lahavdil,
but I'm saying it wasn't in the realm of possibility. It was never, I don't, like the idea that Eliezer would consider it is very unusual. Like the whole Midrash, it seems strange to me. That even Chazal would talk about that he would want it, ad gedekach, that he would do such a thing. But the Midrash do say that. The Midrash say that he wanted him to marry him. Like in the end, Eliezer says, what if I'm not successful? What if I can't go? What if I, you know what I'm saying? Then Abraham says, then I'll free you from my oath. I.e., then Yitzchak can marry your daughter. This whole thing seems very strange. Nonetheless, I want to let's just finish the kliyakar. Okay.
If he is comfortable, he is taking care of Abraham's needs, and he's not separating himself. And you can say the need for Abraham is not the same need as I have. Abraham's son needs something different than what I need for my daughter.
Why would that be? If we all aspire for the same things, you know what I'm saying? He'd want that. It's the greatest.
The greatest thing for his.
Hold on 1 second. Let me just finish. He says that. So that's what he saw. He saw in Eliezer. Yadabo, Avram knew, but Eliezer shu moshel akol asher lo, that he controlled himself. Ve'ein mamono moshel bo, and his money didn't control him. I think you can say the same thing, by the way, about Yosef. Yosef, he managed Paro's house. It's a very, like, when you're given that much power.
I feel like there's paralleling.
There must be. Yeah, we said in Yosef. When you're,
what with
Yosef? I asked you too. She's like, what are you looking at me for? When you are given, like, it's a tremendous nisayon when you're given that much power. You're talking about in work, you know. How many accountants are there? We've had many stories. Like, when you have that much power and you're in that much in control, it's just easy to say, oh, this money will siphon off of here. Nobody would know. What? And that's the worst possible example. I think it happens much more often than we think. That, you know, you're given control and you're in charge of the funds and nobody would know the difference. And you know, like Moshe b'chol asher lo, and yet to be reliable in that way, that's a certain level of trust that you have to that Eliezer merited, and there was a certain greatness in him in that. Okay, I want to share with you just a couple of there's a midrashim that are very famous in midrashim about Eliezer. There's a very famous midrashim about Eliezer and Sodom. Anyway, you're familiar? Have you all heard these midrashim? So the Gemara, we all know that Sodom had we know it was a terrible place. We know that from the pshat, but how bad was it? So there are midrashim about the interplay between these, again, peripheral figures. What happened to Eliezer got to Sodom? So the midrash says...
Why would you think Eliezer got to Sodom?
I don't know. The Gemara tells a story about Eliezer when he arrived in Sodom. Yeah, Avraham's servant. So what would a person like of Avraham's level do when he got to something that was the antithesis of him? So I'm reading from this book, Ishei Tanakh. Great. You ever want to know what the midrash says about a person that appears in Tanakh? There's always something. Okay, so Eliezer got to Sodom. He's domain this dome, it says. He happened to get this dome one day. Pitsa'uhu. Okay? Somebody wounded him. Somebody beat him up. Balifne hadayan. So they went to the judge. He went to the police. Pasak hadayan shalem los charo ba'arakazat adam. So the judge said, he beat you up. You owe him $50 for doing bloodletting for you. It was a medical procedure. Gotta love Sodom. What? We have? It's ringing a bell. You've heard it before. Natal Makel, so he says he took a stick. Upsa'u la Dayan. So he took a stick and beat up the judge. V'amarlo, mashiyesh biyadi shalem lezeh. He said, now you owe me, so I'll tell you what, you pay him and I'll keep my own money.
That's funny. Meaning Eliezer was no wuss.
Exactly. Yeah. Eliezer's very clever. Okay.
But also,
he said they had a special bed in Sodom. I'm just going to read for you. Right, they had a bed that if you were a guest, they said, come sleep in this bed. So if it was too long, it would cut off your feet. And if it was too short, they would stretch. It was like the iron, you know, they would stretch you. So when they offered Eliezer a bed, he said, Amalem, miyom shemeta imi, nadarti lo leshen b'mita. He said, since my mother died, I always sleep on the floor, so I'm okay, thank you very much. He said, one time they had a rule that if you invited a guest to eat with you, they would strip you naked, they would take your clothes away. So Eliezer came to Sodom and there was a wedding, so he sat down. So they asked him, who invited you? So he looks at the guy and he said, that guy. So the guy got like freaked out and he ran away. So he moved over one. And then somebody else came and said, who invited that guy? And the Midrash says, Amar lehem, zu, v'ayach ha-shesh. Chena su kulam shiyashvu al yado, ad shinishar makom reik. Until everybody left. V'achalhu et kol ha-su'udah. And he sat down and had a good meal. The Midrash is fascinating. What do you do with that? I think the Midrash, if I was reading that Midrash, like, there's a sense that I get that Eliezer represents the idea of Jewish ingenuity in the face of persecution. Right? How do Jews deal with...
They're not the image of the Jewish victim.
Correct.
Not sheep.
Right,
not sheep. Really, use your wits, be clever, and figure out a way how to navigate difficult situations.
But there's an element of not being a tzaddik in that. Meaning, he lies when he says, that guy invited me, or...
They're all corrupt! What do you want? Really? You expect him to...
You can't deal honestly.
No, I think...
They were charging him for bloodletting, you know?
I should have looked at the Nazis instead, right. And they walked into that room, but there's... You know,
yes, exactly. Right. You know...
No, it's like what you wrote about Rav Zuckerman davening
I have to say that there's this man named Rav Zuckerman. You might have heard of him, who passed away this week. So I'd heard that he was alive, but I'd never really known anything about him. Rav Zuckerman is a fascinating personality. He's one of the last people who learned really what was the name of the place?
Navarduk, you said.
No, the yeshiva was in the style of Navarduk, but it wasn't Navarduk, it was Plisk. I think he learned the yeshiva in Plisk. Under the Stipler Gaon was the Rosh Yeshiva in Plisk. It was very fascinating. And he came to Israel, he came on his own with his father. There's a lot to be said. So they learned Navarduk. I'm fascinated by the Navarduk. You know, when you say Musar, what does it mean when I tell you they learned Musar? What do you think of when you think of you learned Musar? Midor how? So there's two ways to do midor improvement. The first way is the mussar that I learned when I was younger. You sin this way, you sin that way, you have to be better at this, you have to be better at that. So that was one school of mussar. Navarduk was the entire opposite.
There's the break you down to build you up, and there's the build you up.
That's right. Navarduk was the build you up, the build you up model, which is you are the sons of princes, you are, the Jewish people are excellent, are elegant, you have these incredible abilities.
You wear gloves and top hats.
That's right, they insisted, like Navarduk was into like dressing a certain way and behaving a certain way, and that would influence your actions. It's totally non-existent, by the way, nowadays. It's not really studied in that way. You don't think of Musar in the yeshiva sense that way. So they say that this was their, Rav Yonah Goodman told me yesterday, they also had a thing in Navarduk that as soon as the yeshiva was set, they would say, okay, go take 10 guys and start a sub-yeshiva. Go break off and go do that. You're like, and that's how they started another yeshiva in Plisk and another shlucha here and another... Like, it was really way, way ahead of its time.
But it definitely... That philosophy has definitely seeped its way into general Jewish education.
Has it really? How do we...
I totally disagree. You think you go into a school and you're like, you kids are all... You know, you're so bad.
In yeshiva? In yeshiva, when they talk about tshuva, do they talk about how great you can be, or they talk about how much we have to improve and how we're sinful?
I'm not in yeshiva, so I don't know, but I can certainly tell you that in day schools, you know, like in schools, they definitely talk about you're a bat melech.
Yeah, my kids start at the day, I'm great, I'm Batel Melechim, and I'm great, and I'm amazing.
Nice.
They totally like positive and reinforce.
forced.
Well, I don't know. I don't feel like I had that.
Translated into my dog wants her shopping shoes every day.
What's that? So anyway, so they, one of the things they said that struck me is that the yeshiva, they used to daven in the train station. The bachrim, a group of bachrim, would daven shachrit in the train station. Don't think of it like they remember. They're like they're not all living together. There's no dorm. There's no food. There's whatever you have to like. So they decided they wanted to daven in the train station among all the non-Jews because they felt that it would help them overcome this midah of busha, of unwillingness, and to increase their ability to be strong in the face of adversity. So they went and davened every day. They made a minyan in the train station.
Wow.
Like, you know, like think about that. That how amazing that is. How, you know, how, so I said to Rav Yoni yesterday, we don't do that anymore. He said, sometimes we do it and we take them on like physical challenges. They go on a tiyul and they give them challenges to overcome. But it isn't part of our education, the idea of building up character traits in certain ways, of challenging kids to do tasks and to overcome goals. It's just very fascinating. So this guy, Rav Zuckerman, that was what Rina was talking about, but he came, just briefly, he came to Israel. He was a Tzioni. He had Tzioni tendencies. But he was learning in Bnei Brak, and what was his name? In Ponovich. So they said, they tolerated him. They said, it's okay, we understand. As long as you don't share the stuff that you're reading and writing with other Bachrim, it's okay. And then he and Rav Neria started the yeshiva, Bnei Akiva and Kfar Ro'eh. They started Bnei Akiva, really. And he said, after a while, they had enough boys that wanted to learn. Because it was like, the things that we take for granted, somebody had to start them. The whole system that exists. So they said, okay, we'll start a yeshiva. There was no yeshiva that allowed you to learn in the morning and learn secular studies in the afternoon. It didn't exist. If you wanted to learn, you were learning. And if you wanted to go to secular subjects, then you left yeshiva. There was nothing that really combined in a real way. Why you had started in America, but had not really gotten off the ground in that sense. There was a high school. They didn't really do college. I don't know. Anyway. So, and they started that yeshiva, and as soon as the yeshiva had 50 boys, they sent 10 to go start another yeshiva. You know what I'm saying? And they built a movement. They built the lives that we lead, the children, the way we send our kids to school, was based on these people. And I was always struck that, like, Rav Aaron Cutler learned in Navarduk. Like, just tremendous people who build things were educated to do, that they had the ability to do, that they had great strengths. They weren't torn down, they were built up. And I wonder where that went. You know, that you have amazing abilities and you can do things. And
that's important.
Is it? Important. Okay. And that's very necessary. It's very important. Okay, so that's the Midrash of Eliezer. It's the Midrash of Eliezer. We talked about Eliezer of Moshe B'chol Asher Lo. And we also spoke about, the idea that he's the first, he davened Hashem, he was the person who believed. It's just very interesting. How did Abraham get to Eliezer? How did they find him? How did Eliezer become his Eved? We don't really know that much about him. So he's this peripheral figure that plays a major, major, major role in the development of Klal Yisrael. And yet, where did he come from? So now we're going to skip to another major, major figure who plays a very minor role. I said, Dvorah Meneket
Rivka. Okay, and we raised the point that we don't know his name here.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think he's not called by name?
I did raise that point.
Maybe it's not even him.
But the Midrash takes it for granted that it's
okay,
him.
But it's not shot.
It's him?
It's not saying the text, but it's him.
I don't have an answer. What do you think? I don't have...
I think it's fascinating, but there are a lot of places, like in the beginning of Shemot, right, where Yocheved and all these people who play these very, very, very monumental roles as facilitators of...
I think you're answering your question.
Right.
I think you're answering your question. That, correct, that it's exactly this point, that he's a person that plays a major role in the background. That he plays his role without being Eliezer.
Like, who knew Rav Zuckerman's name until this week?
Well, people knew. A lot of people knew. He was actually, they say, one thing about him
was sure
he never really wanted to be in the headlines. That wasn't his place. He wasn't interested in such things. He was. It wasn't. He was a person. He just wasn't active. You know, like, you know, he hasn't been active for 20 years.
He has.
He's
97, right?
Yeah. He's been active, but not involved in the way that we expect. He's not a public figure, the way we know. But one more thing that I found fascinating they said about him: when people would ask him advice about politically divisive issues, he would never say, "This is what you must do." He would always say, "This is what I would do." And I always sought rabbinic advice from rabbis like that. Weren't imposing their will upon me, but I was I wanted to gain from their wisdom. That's something that I always felt that Atzat HaRav should always be.
Also, if you didn't listen, you wouldn't be in trouble.
No, I'm not. I wasn't halachic. When I ask halacha, and if I ask a psak, when I ask a rav for a psak, then I'm kafuf to the psak.
Right, his.
But I'm not, and I don't ask the rav, what would you do in this case for a psak? When I call for a psak, I get a psak.
Yeah, did he answer that for a psak, or he answered that for an etzah?
What do you mean?
Is that the way, like if someone asked him for a psak, did he say what I would do?
No. For etzah. But I'm saying very often, nowadays we live in a time where people think that when you ask, like, that when you ask a rabbi, the rabbi is going to tell you what to do in your life, and you should do that. And I believe, I would never, if people always, even when people would ask me questions like that, I would never tell them what they should do. You know, I would try to share with them the way I see things and how I understand the question. Because I, you know, it's a question of how you view Rabbanim in general, how you view their role. Whether you view their role as to tell you what to do or to give you advice and to give you and to share from their wisdom. And I found that very meaningful also. Okay, that's one. And I think that the question you ask is, the answer is the question. Eliezer is not there as Eliezer. He's there as Eved Avraham. And that's critical here. And that's a certain greatness too, to be a person that is willing to, like, who said that you can't all be Rav Zuckerman. There's only one Rav Avraham Yosef. But we don't live in a time where the person sitting in the background and doing the legwork, the Moshel B'chol Asherbo, like, we all want to be the name. The name is what, the popularity is what's prominent, as opposed to the person who makes sure that the food is on the table and to make sure that Yitzchak is here.
He's choosing the wants.
Yes.
I mean, he's choosing one of the Imamot, and Avraham's completely relying on him. That's not putting food on the table. That's like a complete reliance.
Totally
on
agree.
The
totally agree.
No, Hashem is choosing. He's the vessel.
Right. Agreed. No, agreed. But.
But.
Don't agree?
Is that why you tell us that he was a Ken Babayani? Like, he would have been the one instrumental in picking a wife for Yitzchak, but
really? No, he couldn't have gone? I'm too old for this. I think that was the reason. That's the fundamental.
What's the point of telling
you? Question number one is, why didn't Abraham go?
It's quite a journey. I mean, it's not like he gets into a chauffeur driven car and goes to the next place.
You think he didn't go?
To be some potential.
Yeah, but maybe that's why they say it. Maybe that's why it's good. That's why it's
good. Maybe Shai Shira.
I am Shirat Shira, I think we call it. What do you call it? The reason I thought that Abraham didn't go is because Yitzchak couldn't go. And if Yitzchak couldn't go, he didn't want to leave him alone. Yitzchak never left Eretz Canaan. Yitzchak didn't leave Eretz Israel, ever. So that's what Midrash says. No, that was the point. He didn't want to walk away. We've definitely discussed this in the past. Abraham said no. They said Im lo timsa and lo tikach ishim ibnot Canaan. We actually have discussed in the past why. No, you didn't want to. That was my perspective. But if you want to say he's too old, I don't know. It's hard. Okay. He's not a baby. He's old.
It's not marriageable age.
He's 40. 37. So wait, no, it was after Shiva. Shiva was over. Shiva's over. It was a month. He waited a month, 2 months, whatever it was. It wasn't like that day. Okay. Skip to Perek of Dalid, Pasuk Nunche. Perek of Dalid, Pasuk Nunche. Chav Dalid, 24:58. You're welcome. So Eliezer is like, I'm sorry, Eved Avraham is like, I gotta go, it's time to go. You want, you know, are you in? Can I take the girl? And they ask her, will you go with this man? It's just interesting, fascinating that he is deliberately unnamed. Okay?
But not only that.
With this man.
A more elevated status than an Eved.
I don't know. I didn't think of that. It was like, you want to go with this man? They clearly don't want her to go. They want her to stick around, because the longer that he sticks around,
the more presents he gets.
The more money you get.
No, but to me also, it's reminiscent of Chutzpah Dik students who talk about female teachers as Zoti.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, this person, right. You want to go, like, you really want to go with this guy? You really want to go with this guy? Is that really what you want? Vatomer, Elech, I am out of here. Okay? Vayishalchu et Rivka Achotam, ve'et Menikta, ve'et Avraham, ve'et Anashav. And they send Rivka, their sister, and Menikta,
her nursemaid.
Her nursemaid, and Evet Avraham, ve'et Anashav.
Alright, she was three.
No. The Midrash says she was three. Remember the Midrash. What is the Midrash trying to do? What's the big concern? What's the huge concern about young girls when you marry off young girls?
That they're not pure.
Correct, they're not pure. Right? So a girl under three, a girl who's three, has a din no matter what, she's pure, i.e. So if you would say that Rivka was older, how would you know? Blah blah blah. So we, especially the men at the time and the place, etc., etc. So the Midrash says she's three to try to convey this idea that she was pure. No.
So what's the nursemaid?
I mean, was she really three? Was she really three? Absolutely.
Wait a minute, anyway, it's still a
we're going to ask the three-year-old. Didn't you guys do the thing about how much water it took? How much water did it took? So like, how much? A three-year-old, really, really. What? What? Yeah, right. They can do anything. Okay. You know, but it's not shy. She's close. Okay. So, let's say she's 12. How old is she? 12, 14, whatever it is. She's 12, we assume. What's the nursemaid?
Well, weren't they a wealthy family also? So, it's again like the government
So, why would you mention that? Would that be something that you would assume you would mention in the pasuk?
I think you would, especially to
Abraham's servant dealing with servants.
When Abraham goes somewhere, does it say Abraham and his servant went somewhere?
No, but in this instance, he said that his servant went to find the
servant. Actually, yeah.
No, it doesn't say Abraham went with his servant. Abraham.
It does.
Well, wait a minute. Is this the first time that we even see that Eliezer brings other people with him?
And his men.
Of
course, you would never travel alone.
Maybe that's to do with the anti-Mushkot.
You would never travel alone.
Every time Abraham takes a big trip.
Yeah.
It says with all his stuff, with all his rechush.
No, that's only when he took all of his stuff. When Abraham went to Mitzrayim, it says Vayirid Abraham Mitzrayim. Didn't say Vayirid Abraham Mitzrayim ve'et Eliezer Anashav. And he also took his mechanic with him. It doesn't say that. Does it mention Hashav at the beginning? I don't remember.
I don't think so.
By the way, what's her name?
When you have that image of like of Rivka feeding, giving water to Eliezer and the camels,
yes.
You don't ever say, I'm going to give water to Eliezer and all of his entourage and all his camels.
And all their camels.
Right? And all their camels.
Which is what he did. Which is what she did.
I've always had this image that like there was a lone guy out in the wilderness.
Yeah.
That's a lot of travels for one guy to take care of.
Right, you would never do it. And you would never travel that far alone. It's a caravan. Which only makes you wonder how Abraham could send away Yishmael and Hagar by themselves.
And
skip
Yaakov,
from here.
And how Rivka sends away Yaakov.
One second. Okay. Skip from here. Hold your place here. And turn to Perek Lamed Hey, Pasuk Vav.
I knew it was just there somewhere. I was looking for it.
Yeah.
I stopped like right before it.
Perek Lamed Hey Pasuk Vav. Yaakov Lamed Hey 35, 6. We're gonna do. You have to do. You know what you want to do. You have to learn the gematria. Do math equations in gematria. Do it with your kids. Vayavo Yaakov Luza. Yaakov is on his way home. By the way, this is after the story of story of Shechem. Yaakov is on his way home. Big family. Everyone's all. You know, he's on his way back, finally.
Lamed Hey
what? Lamed Hey Vav. Asher Beretz Kanan, he beit el, hu v'chol ha'am asher imo. Yaakov is a big man.
He's see? Because
they're traveling permanently. It's not a temporary trip. It's not a trip to Florida. V'yiven sham mizbeach,
v'yikra. Wait a minute, Rivka's leaving her house also for a permanent position as the wife of Yitzchak.
V'yiven sham mizbeach, v'yikra l'makom el, beit el.
Understand that's what you meant.
No. Okay. Ki sham, they called it El Beit El. Ki sham niglu elav Elohim b'barchol b'pnei achiv. So he came back to El Beit El. Where did he come to? Either Har Moriah or Beit El, the place that he, remember, he saw the dream? So he came back to that same place. Vatamot Dvora Meineket Rivka, Vatikaver Mitachat LeBeit El, Tachat Ha'alon, Vaikra Shemo Alon Bachut. Dvora Meineket Rivka died, and she was buried under Beit El, under the Alon. What? Vaikra Shemo Alon Bachut. This whole pasuk is just... What is...
Because the judge
Dvorah
also sits under a tree.
Yes. Is it
a different
Dvorah? What's that again? Different. What Dvorah? Who is it? What same Dvorah? No, totally different. Dvorah Neviah is hundreds of years
also
later.
Under a tree.
Yes, she is.
I'm just saying.
Correct. What in the world Dvorah Meineket Rivka? First of all, what do we notice here? She has a name. Right, we didn't learn her name before.
Right.
What in the world is Dvorah Meineket Rivka doing with Yaakov's family?
Yeah. Well, haven't they married at this point? So it's all one
thing. How old was she?
Yaakov, wait a second.
Yaakov
left.
She should have left a long time
she's
ago.
So old.
She's old. She died. She did die. What in the world is she?
Long time to die.
What?
Long time.
Yeah. Well, how long was it? No, not so long.
She might not have been that much older.
They had a child. Let's think for a second. 70 years. How old are
Yaakov?
How old?
Yaakov
is 70. Yaakov's 40. 20 years till 20 years. 1 second till he's... And then, yeah, old.
But she was...
I don't know. You could do that. You could do the math.
She was already...
You do the math. Wait, where's that book? Where's that crazy book with the math? Maybe they'll tell you how long it was. Okay. What in the world is going on here? Why is she... What is she doing there? She's Meineket Rivka. What is Meineket Rivka doing with Yaakov on the way back from Aram Naharaim, from Lavan's house, back to Eretz Canaan in Beit El?
Sure.
Next question. It says, Vayikra Shemo Alon Bachut. She died. They buried her under this Alon. In Pshat, what's an Alon?
A tree.
And they called it the Tree of Tears. Which means what?
They mourned her.
It wasn't just like they mourned her. She was a significant person.
Yeah.
So what's fascinating is one pasuk, there's like the ever briefest mention of her before, Ve'ed Menikta. You don't know anything about her. All of a sudden she reappears for one pasuk, and we realize that there was this woman who has such significance that who mourned her? It's not Yitzchak who mourned her, not Rivka who mourned her. The next generation, the generation after that mourned her. What in the world is going on here? It's fascinating, isn't it? Fascinating.
The most amazing households, like with Midos, right? So maybe that's where she got.
Oh, very good, very good. So let's look at Rashi first. Let's look at the Parshanim over here for a second. In on Lamed Hey. Vatama Dvorah says Rashi on Pasuk Chet. Ma Inyan Dvorah Bebeit Yaakov. What in the world is Dvorah doing in Beit Yaakov? Rashi and Pasuk Chet.
What's the name of Rashi?
Rashi and Batama Dvorah. Says Rashi, based on the Midrash feeling. Ela lefish amra Rivka liYaakov v'shalachti v'lakachticha misham. So Rivka told Yaakov before he left, before she sent him away, she said, "When the time is right, I will send someone to get you." Shalcha Dvorah etzlo lepadan Aram latzeit misham. She sent Rivka. She sent Dvorah to go get him. Umeta baderech. She died on the way. Midivri Rabbi Moshe Hadarshan limaditiha. Tammy, you said she's an old lady. Why would you send Dvorah, her old, you know, what do you call her, governess? Why would you send her governess to go get Yaakov out of Padan Aram?
Only want your trust.
Why? There's nobody else to go send him and say, what she doesn't, she's in a...
Because she has to send someone to extract Yaakov from the culture.
Oh.
And Dvorah is the one, not only would Yaakov listen to her, but Dvorah came with Rivka, which, you know, was possibly somewhat responsible for her purity to start with.
Very good, very good. If you look at Yonatan Ben Uziel, you have Yonatan Ben Uziel? Do you have it?
Yeah.
Yeah, look at Yonatan Ben Uziel on Pasuk Chet. Umitat Dvorah Pedagogta Dirivka.
That's what I said to you this morning. Do you remember?
That is pedagogy. What is pedagogy?
The teacher.
Right. She is her teacher. She was her teacher. So Rav Neria says, this is a beautiful idea. How in the world did Rivka, who grew up in the house of what was her father's name?
Nahor?
Betuel. Betuel. And Lavan was her brother. And how in the world did she grow up in such a way that she, when Eliezer came to him, she was this paragon of chesed? Of course, everybody's an individual. But really? Is it really reasonable to expect? So Rav Neria says, it must be that she had this person who raised her in a certain way. That she had this person who raised her with elevated values, with spiritual values. Okay? And therefore, so Rav Neria says, that when the time came for Yaakov to come home, right? What is Rivka fear? Like, okay, it was a long time. How long was he there for?
14 years.
At least. So what does Rivka start to think? What is she afraid of?
He's immersed himself.
That's right. Exactly the thing we talked about at the beginning. Moshe b'chol asher lo. You go to a place, raised in the place, you got married there. God only knows what you're going to find when you get to Yaakov. She knew what her son, her pure Yaakov Elo, was like at home. But that's in the house of Yitzchak. She sent him into the lion's den. She sent him, she sent him into a place that valued other things. Who knows? So who do you send? You send the person who raised you with certain values in spite of it.
But they also already know Torah, right?
Who? Now her children, Yaakov knows her, but her sons don't know her.
No, but I'm saying Yaakov's there working for Lavan, right? Lavan is Betuel's son. If you're sending someone into, it's like, they already, what I'm saying is Lavan and Betuel already knew Dvorah from when Rivka was a baby.
Yes, Lavan knew
it. When she went in.
She never got there. So the interesting, she never got there. She met them on the road on the way home. And she died there. Mm-hmm. That she met them, he had already left. Mm-hmm. Like, happily, that wasn't what happened. What Rivka was afraid of wasn't what happened.
But I'm saying she's a good person to send in as a
political bridge.
Yes.
Oh.
Because, she knows the other side. Right. They're familiar with her. She's
bad. Yeah. That's very good. He says the following. Al-Kain ichlita lishloach et Dvorah. She says, send Dvorah. Mila'ot hatvuna. The person of deep understanding. Right, raised in or familiar with Lavan v'Betuel, b'tikvashi, in the hope that berochav da'atah b'tokif ma'amada, with her great wisdom, teidali hitmoded imachshavot haresha shel Lavan. That maybe it wasn't to get Yaakov out of there, but how to get him out of the how to deal with Lavan. Okay, one second. So he says something beautiful like this. He says, "Why do they mourn?"
Where does she come from?
One second. He does. He addresses that. Great question. Lo nimsar, he says the following. Lo nimsar kamen zman sha'atai shisha chachman bona zo.
She's Eliezer or something.
No, he said, we don't know how long this elder woman, Bnei Yaakov, how long she stayed with Yaakov's children. How long was she with them? Why did they mourn her? Okay. Lekabel Pnei Meneket Savta. This is this woman who's the governess of their grandmother. Hadmuta Agagit. Remember, the kids, they never met her. Yaakov's kids are teenagers or whatever, and also this old lady comes. Asher rabot shamu aleha mipi aba b'leilot ha'arukim b'mir'eh. He must have told stories. Let me tell you about Dvorah. We had this crazy story, and we were all running around in the hills, and she came, and she, you know what I'm saying? Like, God only knows. Okay. Heim v'day nitzlu kol sha'a p'nuya l'socheach ita. So they must have, taken advantage of every moment to talk to her, lishmoa dvareha, lilmod mimena umisipureha, to learn from her and her stories, tguvotea, malichotea. Like, she must have been this, like, sharp lady who was on the ball, and she was, like, fun, exciting, whatever. Lo pachot mimashalamdu rabbanan mi'amta de be'rebi, from the rabbanan learned from amta be'rebi. Zman lo aroch zeh, this short time, he speak la'ahiv otalim, so they came to love her. They honored her, they valued her. And then when she died, like, you see that they all took it hard. This is Rav Neria's Sefer, Ner Lamaor, Rav Neria. Yeah, he's imagining it. What? No, it's not a midrash. But he's saying, what in the world? Why were they mourned? But we know that they mourned her terribly. So it must be that they. And here's this cool older lady who came and she just. Yeah?
Yeah. I used to sit on the stoop with her and roll the cup with her and sit
to meet the family. And she would tell me all the stories about where she lived in the kraal and where her children were and how the tokolosh was and the lobola that her husband paid, how many cattle she had. And it was just like...
Wait, so Rav Neria says, the imish al hashoel al dvara atzma. So you wonder, ketzad gadlai b'padan aram? Where did Dvora come that she became this role model in Padan Aram to raise Rivka? So he says the following. So he's now also going to speculate. Okay, nir'ah, it seems. Tofat chariga zo nuvat mi maaseh arav shenasta b'shato ide Avraham Avinu. Says, I asked this question before. Remember, it says ve'et hanefesh asher asu b'charan. Avraham megayaret ha'anashim, b'sar megayaret ha'anashim. He says there were certain people that Avraham was mikarev. Ad kidei kach shemuchanu listarif Avraham. There were the people that joined with Avraham, right, that came to Eretz Canaan. He says, but there were other people. Umatam yu keile asher rami karvu ma'od la'Avraham ulahadrachato. There are people who were mikurav, who loved Avraham, who wanted his ways. Aval la'azov akov lelechet. But to follow him to this unknown, I'm leaving, who's with me? I mean, that's a lot. So they weren't ready for that. But there were people who still followed in Abraham's footsteps. They continued his path, they continued his teachings. Okay? This is a very fascinating issue in Kiruv. A very fascinating discussion if you're in the rabbinic circles. Talk about Kiruv professionals. What's the success story in Kiruv? So they say, so that is a zero-sum game, right? When people become religious. So you can't do that. That's not fair. It's not reasonable. He said, there are certain people who, you know, they get something, or they're children, or they won't intermarry, or they won't, you know, they say, you know, is that a success? So he brings this up also. Avraham did a lot of great work, but not everybody became, you know, came Eliezer. Said, I want to join your family, I want to join your household. There were other people that Avraham affected indirectly, or that Avraham affected directly, but weren't really to, you know...
Which also answers the question why Avraham even sent Eliezer back to his ancestral home to get a wife, right? Like, it always struck me...
Different shear, different disgusting. I have an answer. I just want to finish this point.
He says, so this is also an answer.
All these names... Well, there's not... Well, Avraham definitely affected more people in Eretz Canaan than he did outside Eretz Canaan. You know, why wouldn't he go to the people in his household? Before Eliezer got to Aram Naraim, asked for Hashem to do chesed, kvar hikdim HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'yif'ilet midat chesed la'Avraham. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu planted a seed of chesed for Avraham long before. How? Because there was this woman that Avraham was mekurav, who did chesed for him, who was raising his future daughter-in-law. It's so fascinating because according to Rav Neria, what he's saying is we never know the plants that we see, the seeds that we plant, like early on in life. And who knows how the actions that we do will come back to bring blessing to Klal Yisrael later on. And it's never like it's not always the seed. Oh, see, he was Makarim. In my Torah work, I sometimes do what's called Birurei Yahadut. So sometimes I actually have to call people and ask about their Jewish practice. So I talked to this woman who most of the family is clearly assimilated or whatever. And her parents, she says, her great-grandmother, her mother told her, this woman is now a grandmother, but her mother told her they used to go to the great-grandmother with firm, with the sheitel and the orthodox and everything. The way she said it. This woman is not religious at all. She went to France. I don't know if you know what I'm saying. She went to France with her husband or whatever. But her daughter came to Israel to study in university, went back, decided she's not happy in America, made Aliyah, has a child here, is now getting married here. Who knows what merit that these great-grandparents, I guess, said, wow, you come full circle, because your great-grandparents, they were religious in Europe, and now they have a great-great-grandchild who's being raised as a Jew in Israel. Who knows? We plant the seeds. Avraham Avinu, according to Rav Neria, plants a seed. He does kiruv work. He brings about the Torah of Hashem of Chesed and Aram Narayim. And there's this woman who got hired as a governess, who ends up raising his daughter-in-law and ends up having great influence on his grandchildren. It's a beautiful story. I think we talk about the peripheral people. These people played much greater roles than we could possibly imagine. They played tremendously significant roles. And we have to give them credit, even though they don't always get the press. I'm going to stop here.